pencil used to draw a preschool masterpiece, which car to drive, which college to attend, which course of study to follow, which career path to pursue. Some of us choose the career path more than once. We may choose a spouse, or they may choose us, or perhaps we choose a companion of the canine or feline variety instead, a safer choice, as they are more honest and devoted than any human. As much as any of these things is in our control, we choose when and how and whether to marry or to divorce, when and how to become parents, when and how to buy a home or to move from the home we've known into an assisted living community. Every day we choose, and the choices seem complicated, complex, high stakes. After all, we all make choices, some life-giving and some fatal for sure, but most of them falling somewhere in a gray area of neither good nor bad, just necessary. On the one hand, we choose from an embarrassment of riches. 50 varieties of cereal on the grocery store aisle, 10 different varieties of apples. But more importantly, we choose how to interact with the people we love and how to interact with the people we would rather not be commanded to love. We choose how we will respond to events happening around us. We choose, for instance, how we will respond to the commonality of pervasive sexual harassment, or how we will react to the news of yet another deadly mass shooting, this time in a church service in Sutherland Springs, Texas. How will we respond to the fear we feel when we consider that it could happen here, too? Each of you could have chosen to be anywhere this morning. You have chosen to be here, and we are thankful. There are far more than 26 people in the pews I've marked with green tape, but the proportion is about right, given the size of our congregation compared to that of First Baptist Church of Sutherland Springs. Surely you've heard by now that 26 people were killed 1 week ago today in that church. That's a fourth of their congregation. And another 20 were injured when a person carrying an AR-15, an automatic rifle, walked up and down the center aisle, systematically shooting people, pausing only momentarily to reload his weapon. Many of you heard this devastating news when you chose to attend the powerful concert that was the last of three events in our Festival of Music and Arts last weekend, a weekend devoted to ending gun violence in Philadelphia and beyond. I didn't hear about this tragedy until I returned home late Sunday night from preaching at a colleague's installation service in New York City, but I haven't stopped thinking about it since. I can tell you that what happened at Sutherland Springs is a pastor's nightmare. A sanctuary is supposed to be a safe place. That's why we call it a sanctuary. The people of Sutherland Springs could have chosen to be anywhere last Sunday morning. They chose to go to church, and I can't say I'm thankful. I wish that by some freak of probability, every last one of them had chosen to stay home. But they didn't. And the choice made by the gunmen to walk into their sanctuary, their safe space, firing an AR-15, proved to be fatal for more than a quarter of their congregation. All the pastors I know were playing out the scenarios in our heads. What would happen if this tragedy struck our own beloved people in our own beloved sanctuary? And we have a choice to make, one that seems complicated. We can fixate on our own security and safety, or we can choose to serve God rather than serving fear. You could have chosen to be anywhere this morning. You have chosen to be here. I suppose that's step one. certainly made for a longer than usual scripture passage, but I have no regrets, at least not yet. Because just before Joshua issues his famous mandate for the people to choose whom they will serve, he gives them a reminder of their history with the God who brought them out of Egypt, who led them in the wilderness, who destroyed other groups of people along the way so that the Israelites could inhabit a promised land that had not belonged to them. Joshua reminds the people that it was this God who felled their enemies, who gave you a land on which you had not labored, and towns that you had not built. And you live in them, you eat the fruit of vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. Make no mistake, when Joshua sets these choices before the people, it's a little bit like when I only have time and energy to cook a simple meal, so I give my children the choice of having spaghetti or worms for dinner. Now, technically, they still have a choice, but no Shelley kid today has ever chosen worms. So Joshua sets a choice before the Israelites. Would you like to worship the gods of the people who enslaved you in Egypt? The people God plagued and drowned in the Red Sea? Or how about the people whom God destroyed in order to give you their land? No? Oh, wow, okay then. How about the God who's been with you and for you all along and is really the only viable choice? No wonder the people facing more oil, when we spend more time obsessing about how we might protect ourselves from disaster, rather than working to end the loopholes in our laws that allow for these disasters to persist time and time again among all people. I think we're chasing more oil when we choose to hoard more than we need because we're more concerned with having a cushion than with the reality that not everyone has enough. I think we're chasing more oil when we explain away these choices as complicated rather than realizing it's simple. We're just choosing to eat worms. It's easy to compartmentalize, to think that how we spend our money, our time, and our energy, and our devotion has nothing to do with our lives of faith. We think that we can hold the spiritual things in one hand and cling tightly to our finite resources in the other, but it just doesn't work that way. Cindy reminded me this week to preach a stewardship sermon, not a social justice sermon, but I think the two are not mutually exclusive, and she knows that as well as I do. In fact, I'm not sure how to do the one without the other. Now, to be fair, as an associate pastor, I don't have to worry so much about the money that it takes to keep this place going, or the money we need to pay our staff a livable wage, or to cover